been uncompetitive in a lot of games, which is scary. For many years, North was uncompetitive, and they went on that multi-year winless streak that a lot of people remember. North has since gotten some wins and all of that. They still are outclassed a lot of nights. And now Memorial, which for many years would hover around 500, get into the playoffs, maybe pluck a game in level one, they've taken a step back the last couple of years. What's the answer? I don't know. I don't think anybody really knows what the answer is as far as getting the football team to be competitive. Just because other sports are really good at Memorial, and you can't be good in everything. Kids focus on sports. Even if they play multiple sports, they focus on certain sports. And for a lot of the football players, football is their second, third, if not their fourth sport. They do it in the fall, stay in shape, have fun, play football sort of thing. It's not their off-season focus in the summer and all of that. But you still have to figure out a way to be competitive. And a lot of people will be trying to figure that out, I think. A lot of people will be trying to figure that out. But tonight, all Menominee. You know, I'll say this. Said at the beginning of the broadcast and all that. You know, Memorial, North L, they get their revenge in some other sports and all that. Just last night, the Memorial boys soccer team, and the soccer team, of course, is a fantastic outfit. They bulldozed Menominee last night in boys varsity soccer, but that has no bearing on tonight. Menominee wins this one going away by the final score of 42-7. Quick look at what's going on with Eau Claire North. Eau Claire North having their homecoming tonight. They're taking on DC Everest. That game is late in the third quarter. DC Everest leads Eau Claire North 29-7. So DC Everest leading North 29-7. The win tonight for Menominee improves their record of 4-2 overall. They'll stay 1-2 in the Big Rivers Conference. Meanwhile, Memorial 0-6 overall, still 0-3 in the Valley Football Conference. Memorial's last win came in the second to last game last season at Wisconsin Rapids. Well, look at the schedule. Next week, Memorial home, their first ever on-campus homecoming, by the way, next Friday night. And next Friday night, Memorial will take on Wisconsin Rapids. So Memorial takes on Wisconsin Rapids next Friday night at Memorial. Homecoming for Memorial. Old Abes will try to get off the snide then. We do not have any coverage of high school football next week. We'll be back with you in 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, we'll be back with you. Eau Claire North at home to take on Marshfield. Eau Claire North at home to take on Marshfield in 2 weeks. Our coverage will begin at 6:45 on Friday, October the 10th. Well, that'll wrap it up for us tonight from the campus of UW Stout-Williams Stadium. Menominee blows out Memorial tonight 42-7. Big thanks to Chuck back at the Palatial Studios of Civic Media, keeping us on the air on 93.5, and a big thanks to all of you for tuning in as well. On behalf of everyone who made this broadcast possible, I'm Scott Montesano saying there's a great big beautiful tomorrow shining at the end of every day. Make sure to take advantage of it. And until next time, so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Eau Claire Area High School Football on 93.5 The Tap and Eau Claire Hometown Media. For a complete schedule of upcoming games, visit echometownradio.com.
And we're seeing it. This autism thing is kind of gaining some steam in that it really is about blaming women. And understand, the right has always been in your place, ladies. You got to be honest about it. And this whole push towards this kind of hyper-religious, we're going to take food out of the mouths of children, and we're going to take health care from people while claiming we're Christian, has been very interesting for me. But something positive happened. We've been talking about Ryan Walters, who had been the superintendent of Oklahoma's public education. And, you know, we've gone after him for a couple of days now saying, look, you should be doing better things for kids in your school districts. You shouldn't probably be one of the worst states for a whole bunch of reasons. Maybe do something else. Well, it turns out he's doing something else. He has left his job, I guess. And what's he going to do? He's going to go run a conservative education nonprofit. Yeah, the people who want to privatize and profitize education, that's where he's going. The group name, as I've found out, is Teacher Freedom Alliance. Teacher Freedom Alliance. According to the website, their mission is to help teachers develop free, moral, and upright American citizens. Yeah. The statement that they put on their website announcing Walters says that Walters fearlessly fights the woke liberal union mob. TFA will take the fight straight to the unions, and we will not stop. Together, we will build a national movement that is centered around freedom and common sense, not on bullying and intimidation. See what they did there? A little bullying, a little intimidation, but centered on not. They said that educators will now be able to break free. On Twitter, or X, or what was Twitter, the guy who was the head of the schools in Oklahoma put out on Wednesday night, liberals' worst nightmare is about to come true. And use the possessive form of liberals, apostrophe S, meaning that it belongs to a single liberal. So would it be me he's talking about? Am I his worst nightmare? Are you his worst nightmare? Because he should have used the plural. And I know you're being nitpicky, Rick. No. I would understand if I did it, or if, you know, any other truck driver or electrician or person swinging a hammer or the person who hands me food out the window at the fast food restaurant, I would understand if they did it, but not the guy who's in charge of the education system in Oklahoma. And I say, you know, good riddance to you, sir. Go play in your billionaire funded think tank. Go do the work of the privatizers and the profitizers, and you will be rewarded with a king's ransom. Because, after all, it's the reason he did all this stuff, in my view. Wanted to curry favor. Yeah, we don't have money for actual books in Oklahoma, but we're going to buy Trump's Bibles? It's almost as if they put people in charge of things that they want to destroy. Because remember, you know, Donald Trump chose Linda McMahon to be the head of the Department of Education with the sole intention of destroying it. It seems like Republicans don't believe in government. Oh, wait a second. They keep telling us that over and over and over and over. It's just that we're too dumb to realize they're serious. They mean it. Words have meaning. I say good riddance to Mr. Walters. And I normally would say good luck, but I don't want him to have good luck. Because to be honest, our teachers' unions are the ones fighting for better conditions for them to teach in. Which means those better conditions for them means better conditions for our students to live, to learn in. We've got some interesting times ahead, folks. And I'm telling you, these folks, scary times. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, James Comey indicted. As you knew was going to happen. Look, you know, Trump's calling for all of his political opponents and anybody involved in the Russia hoax. We're going to see lots of perp walks. But Comey, you know, not being silent, went out on social media and said, hey, my family and I have known for years that there are costs to standing up to Donald Trump, but we couldn't imagine ourselves living any other way. We will not live on our knees, and you shouldn't either. He said, my heart is broken for the Department of Justice, but I have great confidence in the federal judicial system, and I am innocent, so let's have a trial. And I got to tell you, I'm kind of glad that he has confidence in our judicial system, because I'm not sure that I do. And here to share some thoughts on this and, well, all the other insanity going on, I've asked my good friend Lisa Graves to come share some thoughts. She's the founder and executive director of True North Research, truenorthresearch.org, the website. Lisa, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, it's an honor to be on your show and have the chance to talk with you and your audience. I really appreciate it.
So what do you make of this? Are we going? Do you think we're going to, as I do, that we're going to see a lot of perp walks because we need a good distraction? But more than anything, we're going to have some axe grinding, some payback, some dictator stuff.
Yeah, it really is extraordinary. They haven't made the indictment public yet, but I really appreciated James Comey's comments about we will not live on our knees. No American should feel like they have to live on their knees and feel like they are at risk of being arrested because they have opposed Donald Trump, because Donald Trump doesn't like them. But we are entering a new period of the ongoing constitutional crisis that we're in. That crisis includes an economic crisis. It includes a legal crisis. It includes a social crisis. And this effort, which was basically dictated by Trump this past weekend, telling Pam Bondi, his former defense attorney, who's now paid by us to be the Attorney General of the United States, that she needed to start getting people arrested, produced this result tonight, which was the former head of the FBI being indicted and Trump glorying in this. And I have to say, Rick, I had to go back and double check my notes on this, because I'm old enough to remember in 2016 when Donald Trump made a huge stink about Bill Clinton getting on Loretta Lynch's plane for a half hour one day in 2016, and him claiming it was outrageous for them to meet. They said that they talked predominantly about grandkids. They didn't talk anything about Hillary Clinton or the emails or email servers. But Donald Trump at that point was claiming that a mere meeting between his opponents, his political opponent's spouse and the attorney general was inappropriate. Fast forward 9 years, and here we are with Trump dictating to the Justice Department people that he opposes, that he claims are involved, like you said, in this Russia hoax, which was not a hoax, that they should be indicted, that they should be charged with crimes. And we're about to see James Comey arrested and tried.
But this should be the moment that we all go, yeah, we're in full dictator mode. This is what authoritarians do. This is the playbook. You guys wrote it. This is it.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the playbook. We did write a piece on the authoritarian playbook on the authoritarian infrastructure that's on our site, truenorthresearch.org, to talk about these maneuvers by a president. The Constitution does not endow the president with that kind of power. The job of the Justice Department is to execute the laws, to be a fair you know, component in our justice system. But right now, it's basically an instrumentality of Trump. And it really does, it's so upsetting. I really do appreciate what Comey said about his heartbreaking for the Department of Justice. I used to walk into the Department of Justice through those doors on Pennsylvania Avenue, the aluminum doors where, carved above, it said, the place of justice is a hallowed place. The place of justice is a hallowed place. And it has been desecrated by this politicization of the Justice Department. Now, the Trump people claim that that Jack Smith was politicizing it. What he was doing was investigating the attack unleashed on our Capitol that resulted in mass injuries and the death of, some police officers as part of Trump's effort to try to stop the vote from being counted. That was a legitimate set of crimes that, were worthy of investigation, important investigations. What Trump is doing is basically the revenge tour. And he said that's what he was going to do last year. He was going to get revenge on his enemies. And just this last week, he basically said he hates his enemies. And among the other things that happened this past week was his assailing Jimmy Kimmel and, urging that ABC lose its license. And, on and on and on. Every single day, there's some new transgression of what the rule of law has meant and should mean in this country. And one of the things it should mean is that the president should not be dictating the prosecution of people in the United States.
Yeah, and it's going to get worse because, look, I just read a story. John Bolton evidently is next coming up because, hey, he doesn't like John. He was Bolton. Bolton was his guy, and then he wasn't. This, again, nobody's safe from this guy who's, as you pointed out, said that he is going to be dictator on day one, and it's going to be the retribution tour. Here's my problem. One, this isn't how we do things, how we shouldn't be doing the things. This is how bad things happen in bad places. But still, price of eggs hasn't come down. Wages haven't gone up. Gas prices haven't come down. Lives are not getting better. So for me, this is part of the distraction tour that we're going to get a steady diet of. Steady diet of, the laser pointer for the cat. Because clearly, we are not on his mind at all.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they ran trying to blame Biden for the price of eggs when he had nothing to do with the price of eggs, Kamala Harris didn't have anything to do with the price of eggs. These are factors in terms of the market and bird flu and, supply. But also, we've seen corporations gouging Americans. We saw them do it during the pandemic. We saw them do it when the gas prices surged a couple of years ago. Those prices never came back down. It was a one-way ratchet to pad the profits of the CEOs and their close investors, the biggest investors. And we now see Trump come into office and basically disregard all of the efforts that they made verbally, in essence, to tell people that they were going to save the economy. And instead, what we've seen is chaos with this administration, proposing what looked like AI-generated tariffs that were nonsensical, that are ultimately going to affect the ordinary American in terms of the products you buy. And in fact, we already saw a surge in consumer spending of people trying to get that refrigerator or that stove to replace it before the prices get jacked up by the Trump tariffs. And then we've seen Trump brag about this bill, this big billionaire bill, I call it, which again is going to hurt people in their pocketbooks in terms of Medicaid and Medicare and prescription drugs. It's already happening. And this sort of rationing of access to vaccines, trying to basically limit kids from getting mandatory vaccines to go to school. Like this is destructive of the American family, of our American community. And like you said, a lot of this is about power and about distraction. It's destruction and distraction. And it's distraction from this, the fact that Trump and his family have become massively richer since last November through all these, Bitcoin sort of, not Bitcoin itself, but like this cryptocurrency and more. It is shocking the amount of looting, in essence, that's happening through this administration's effort to basically enrich itself through Trump's efforts to enrich himself and his family while ignoring the real concerns of the ordinary person in terms of, you know, what's happening in our grocery stores, in our communities, and more.
Now, it's interesting. As you were talking, I was thinking about an email I got the other day from a listener who said, you know, nobody defends a billionaire like a guy making less than 40 grand a year. And which is, you know, kind of a weird situation where we're at, because a lot of people that I know are defending Trump's actions on crypto and on, you know, foreign relations and on, you know, every time I see him on TV, I think was it Stewart that said it's like a Make-A-Wish kind of a scenario. Every time people go to see him, they have to bring him gifts, and it's got to be the most special gift ever. We're in crazy times. And, you know, while we're focused on the circus, bad things are happening. For instance, you know, Comey talked about, you know, his crying for the Department of Justice. I guess just yesterday, was it? The Department of Justice filed a federal lawsuit against California, Michigan, Minnesota, New York, New Hampshire, and my state of Pennsylvania because they didn't hand over the state's voter registration rolls. They didn't give everything over to the federal government. Because, you know, what would Trump and Doge boys and all those folks want with that information anyway?
Yeah, I mean, the states have been standing up for the integrity of their voting rolls. The fact that this administration wants access to that data, wants to insist that it has a right to that data, is really extraordinary. And we know this comes in the wake of efforts by Republican operatives to basically claim that, you know, people shouldn't be voting if they have the same name as someone else. Well, I've got news for you. There's like 32 Lisa Grayses out there. I don't know how many Rick Smiths there are, but I suspect there might be 100 with your name. And we've seen this effort to try to claim that, you know, this was Kris Kobach's plan over in Kansas to try to say that he wants to look at the voting rolls to see if there's any people whose names, you know, where they've moved. Well, you don't know if it's the same person. The states do this year in and year out. There's no evidence of widespread voter fraud. There's no evidence of any statistically significant voter fraud. And we should not be allowing Trump and Doge or the Doge bros to have access to that data. We know that what the Doge team wanted, in part when they came in with Trump's blessing, engaging in all this destructive cutting, was they wanted access to the Social Security database. They wanted access to the IRS database. That's what they were going for. That's how some people got fired, because they wouldn't turn over the keys to access these important systems that control and hold data, accurate data on the American people. There's no way these states should cave in to Donald Trump. But as I think you're alluding to, Rick, this may be a ploy in order for them to basically try to discount or disregard the results of those 2026 midterm elections. And say that those states' votes shouldn't be counted, or whoever they vote for the House or Senate shouldn't be counted. So this is part of a larger playbook. It's a dictatorial playbook, and it's something that we cannot allow to stand.
Or, you know, waiting for 2028 to roll around so that they can do what they wanted to do in 2020, because, you know, they've already shown their hand. Yeah. And their hand is they don't trust we the people. They don't want us voting. As long as they've got control of the House, which if Democrats take the control in 2026, that may change. But, you know, understand, the billionaires in this country spend a lot of money paying really smart people to dream up really bad ideas in these conservative think tanks that are all over this country. So not surprised a bit that they're testing some of this stuff and gathering information. But for us voters, this should be one of those frightening things that even my red hat conservative friends should be afraid of. And this should be a wake up call for liberals and Democrats to, as a friend of mine said on election night 2016, going to be interesting to see liberals become states' rights people, because it is going to go back to the states, isn't it?
Well, it really is an extraordinary circumstance. And you've never seen Democrats try to seize this kind of data. This has been part of the Trump team's agenda for quite some time. This effort to discredit elections, the efforts to basically cancel the votes of the people of Arizona and Wisconsin. We saw Jenny Thomas involved in efforts to have, you know, alternative electoral slates based on completely ridiculous claims about the integrity of the vote. And I'm sure, like you said, we'll see that on steroids in 2028. If there is an election, just yesterday, we saw Lindsey Graham, the senator from South Carolina, who has become a sycophant of Trump, saying, yeah, third term would be great. even though the Constitution expressly by amendment, an amendment that was adopted, legally ratified, that says that no president can serve more than two terms. These Republicans, again, are throwing up, you know, trial balloons about the possibility of Trump staying in power basically indefinitely.
So let me ask you this.
Trump himself has said that.
So,
yeah.
So if Trump gets to run for a third term, do you think an Obama, you know, run? Because I think in playing a game, and democracy is clearly not a game, but in, if you know, playing the board game of democracy, it might be an interesting kind of election cycle to see someone with the talents and the ability to run a good campaign like Obama was able to do against Trump. It might be interesting because, look, Democrats have run really bad campaigns these last couple times around. It might be interesting.
Well, you know, I mean, the reason why that amendment was adopted was because FDR was so popular.
Right.
But, you know, it was adopted and it is law. But I take the sort of experiment, thought experiment of what if Obama could run again? You know, would he win? Would he win resoundingly like he won his previous campaigns for the, you know, for the White House? I don't know. The thought experiment is compounded or, you know, complicated for me in part because, you know, we saw Trump's director of national intelligence try to claim that the national intelligence agencies that were doing their job and documenting Russia's efforts to interfere in the 2016 election, that somehow that was illegitimate. The very agencies that she is, you know, leads now as the director of national intelligence, that Tulsi Gabbard effort, you know, basically tries to jeopardize the Obama administration, the determinations of that national security infrastructure that were based on substantial evidence, as they described it, of Russian interference. And in fact, we saw it happening. We know Donald Trump invited Russian interference in that election. We saw people indicted for trying to lie about their contacts with Russia, legitimately indicted.
Yeah.
We saw Facebook getting richer basically from taking money from Russian cutouts to run divisive ads on Facebook in that 2016 election. And so this idea that it was a hoax is just ridiculous. But I guess I can't rule out that Donald Trump would try to have Barack Obama arrested too.
Yeah, no, it's all of them, all on the line. But you know, the weird thing is as you were talking, I was remembering the NRA had some play in this as well. Didn't they have someone who was?
Yes.
Wasn't there, what was that? there was
a Russian operative who was funneling money to the NRA that was also, and they were also then running ads to try to help Trump get elected. There were Russians coming out of the woodwork.
But it goes to show you, though, Lisa, it goes to show if you give me enough time and repetition, you can convince anyone of anything, because that's what's happened here. You know, the Red Hat crowd, you know, in their Fox view there, all they're getting is, you know, Russia's a hoax. And I've had people tell me that it's a hoax. There's nothing there. And I'm going, here's the book. Here's the information. Maybe crack it open. And no, I know. And that's a scary place for this country to be in, when you have that kind of cognitive dissonance. So let me ask you a last line of questioning, because clearly this isn't going to stop. How do people keep their sanity? How do we weed through what so much of what, to use a Ronald Reagan line, you know, so much of what they believe isn't true? How do we weed through what kind of minutia is coming at us?
Well, it really is a challenge, because there are these vectors of propaganda that are churning out disinformation on a daily basis and not covering things very selectively to try to present Trump as a winner, to try to, you know, smear anyone who criticizes him. And so that is a real challenge. But I guess I would say, you know, one thing is it's very easy to get caught in the worry, given the times we're in. But the reality is that we just have to take one step at a time. We have to do our best in this moment and this day. We have to try to reach out to people that we know, not give up on them, to try to, you know, open their ears, open their eyes to what's happening, because it really is astonishing what's happening. And to the people who, you know, are wearing those red hats, who have put up these flags of Trump's face and things like that, you know, I hope that they will actually read our Constitution. You know, read it for the first time if you haven't. Read the First Amendment. It says Congress shall make no law. Read the Declaration of Independence that talked about a tyrannical king who would not subject himself to the laws. You know, our founding documents, and we're coming up on the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, they contain principles that should guide us in this moment. And they should guide all of us as Americans, regardless of what hat we wear, what party we may vote with, you know, but that we are first and foremost Americans. We are not people who should be on their knees for any president of any party at any time. And so we just have to, I think, renew those principles, not let ourselves give in to fear, as Comey says, not live on our knees, stand up for what America stands for, speak out for our First Amendment, speak out against censorship, speak to our friends and family, and express our sincere concerns about this, what's this move yep. toward these dictatorial actions by a president, any president, no matter their party.
There you go. Lisa Graves, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. Founder, executive director of True North Research. Check out their website, truenorthresearch.org. Lisa, thanks so much.
Thanks, Rick. Thank you so much.
Want to hear your thoughts. How are we going to get through this? Something you're paying attention to? I want to hear it. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, home for the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, a low in the upper 50s. Sunshine for Saturday, a high in the mid-70s. And more sun on Sunday, highs again in the mid-70s. Staying dry next week, we'll see temps even warm into the 80s. It's 60 right now.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
ABC capitulating, pulling Jimmy Kimmel off the air. Mark Jacob.
Fascists look for pretexts. They want excuses to do terrible things. The right wing is looking for excuses to become even more authoritarian than it already is. The Turk thing is their pretext. 2 months ago, Trump was posting about getting rid of Jimmy Kimmel. It didn't have anything to do with Charlie Kirk. Not a thing. That's just a pretext.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I couldn't wait to talk to my next guest because he wrote a piece not too long ago on Lori Chavez DeRemer's gushing to our dear leader, inviting him to see his big, beautiful face on a banner in front of the Department of Labor building. Because, as she said, you are really the transformational president of the American worker. And the more I thought about that, I'm going, you know, I don't think she's entirely wrong. Because transformational, most of us think is, you know, something good. But the reality is transformational could be also bad. And I think that's what we're seeing out of Secretary Lori Chavez DeRemer's Department of Labor. And, well, our dear leader, the unitary executive, Donald Genius Trump. And here to share some thoughts on that and share some thoughts on all the other stuff going on in the world of labor. That's my good friend Michael Sonato to come share some thoughts. Michael, thanks for taking time for us.
Of course, Rick. Glad to be here.
So in in one of your Guardian pieces, which I highly suggest people check out your work over at The Guardian, because it's important, you quoted Larry Chavez DeRemer in this gushing kind of Marilyn Monroe-esque kind of dear Mr. President moment. How are things at the Department of Labor under her leadership?
Not good, talking to staff that are still there. So about 20% of staff at the Department of Labor have left, you know, voluntarily. This is a department that was already understaffed, having issues with that. You know, they've been understaffed for years and years, despite the working population growing, just hasn't kept up with it. And not only that, they've had to recently bring back some workers who left, to resign, because they just couldn't fulfill critical roles. Speaking with workers, morale is obviously low. Things aren't working. There's just red tape in terms of being able to, conduct, wage theft enforcement, OSHA enforcement, things like that. The outreach is difficult. Countless numbers of programs have been canceled or cut. Benefits for their own workers have been cut. So you hear from the Trump administration, they're all about American workers and great for workers. They canceled mental health care benefits, child care subsidies. They're getting rid of unions for workers across the federal government, getting rid of collective bargaining agreements just unilaterally. It's just a bleak time. And just countless, whether it's Department of Labor or any other department I've spoken with workers, they're just frustrating. The mission and the work that they've been doing has really been kneecapped by these cuts and what the administration has been rolling out on a regular basis, which is just threats, intimidation. They've been doing it with the government shutdown. They're threatening to use it to fire workers, which is a goal of Project 2025. They want to reduce the federal workforce by a million workers, which is just ridiculous.
And no, Michael,
results,
Michael,
economically,
Michael, it's transformational. Lori Chavez Dreamer said, "Transformational president," and what you've laid out, kind of is from bad to worse.
To much worse. And this is, we're not even a year into the presidency, and we're still, things on the horizon. The NLRB still doesn't have a quorum. Everything I've seen come out of the Department of Labor, they've tried to cancel the Job Corps program. Luckily, court halted that. They've tried and failed to cut several things. Many of those efforts are led by the labor movement. Labor unions are still pursuing in the courts. It seems to be the only reprieve from the authoritarian efforts of this administration to just get rid and eliminate programs, workers, funding that they ideologically don't agree with, or even if they do, they got rid of the collective bargaining agreement for the Bureau of Prisons. They're supposed to be all pro cop and all against crime, and they're even going after them.
I know people who represent the corrections officers, and one of the guys said, look, my members would complain about how bad things were, and I would tell them, imagine how much worse they would be without us here to represent you, without having a collective bargaining agreement to at least have at least the weak language that they had. Imagine if there was nothing. Well, they're finding out.
Absolutely. And even the people in charge of this administration, they're breaking things. We saw it with Doge. They're breaking things and having to walk back things that they break. And the IRS had to bring back workers. GSA had to bring back workers. Just right after that, they're saying that they're going to fire even more. The chaos that is going to create. Next week, September 30th, we're going to have the biggest resignation of workers in U.S. history. All the worker federal workers that took the deferred resignation program, who have been on leave but still getting paid for not working, which has wasted over $14 billion, according to a report by Senator Blumenthal. Those workers are going to be gone. That's a significant chunk of the federal workforce. And on top of that, we're facing down a government shutdown that is going to affect federal workers, the services, contractors, and benefits. It's just a blitzkrieg of attacks on working people. The policies are, you know, just creating an environment where things are just going to get more and more expensive. You know, the Trump's latest tariffs announced on Truth Social. He's announced tariffs on furniture, kitchen cabinets, and pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, yeah. Is life getting better for you, Michael? How are things in Michael's world? Because look, I talk to a lot of working people. Life's not getting better. Gas prices haven't come down. Eggs aren't cheaper. Car insurance isn't any cheaper. Rent's still going up. Groceries had a massive jump, biggest jump since the peak of the pandemic. How you doing?
Not good. And yeah, healthcare is about to skyrocket, especially if the ACA subsidies are, you know, approved, which this administration doesn't want to do. On top of, they just added tariffs onto pharmaceuticals. I don't think there's anything, you know, you can see, we're seeing the same rhetoric. You know, I deal with the administration. They are constantly just in a just blind mode of everything we're doing is great. The best thing ever. It's just echoing Trump's rhetoric, and yep, it's living in a different planet.
No. And that's the mastery of what Trump has gotten away with. And look, when you create the kind of echo chamber that the right has built over the last 40 years, you can get away with it because nobody's going to question, dear leader. Our unitary executive could tell us the sky is blue when it's nighttime out, and we'd buy it. But you know, here's the sad reality. People are still suffering and still struggling. And I keep saying it's going to take that kind of mass pain for people to finally come back together as we went through during the Depression. Maybe we need that kind of cataclysmic event to bring people back together. Because look, you got a report out now, you know, saying, look, in right to work states, union membership's declining faster than everywhere else. Union membership now, because of Trump, overall, what, in the single digits now? Almost where it was when it was illegal to be a union member?
It is, you know, very bleak. And I think just that report just shows that, you know, I don't think we need, should wait until it gets that bad, or, you know, just hope it gets that bad and wait for people to stand up. I think, you know, states need to step up and start, you know, getting ready for and insulating their own citizenry from these disastrous policies. And that's going to be difficult. You know, we saw the biggest cuts to SNAP in U.S. history, to Medicaid, to, you know, just across the board. And
right,
the data that they don't like, they're getting rid of. They're
no, this is what I'm saying, Michael. This is where I'm at. Maybe this is the only way we're going to wake up, is when those things that they're doing actually hurt people and people that you know. It's not just the other, not just the anecdotal, I know a guy. It's going to be, hey, that's me. I think only then are we going to come around. Because look, you know, for 40 years now, I've been hearing people saying, I can't make ends meet, rent's too expensive, cost of living's too high, wages haven't kept up. And yet people aren't using the one tool that can help that. And that is coming together with your coworkers, joining and forming a union, collective bargaining, all of that. Not so much.
Unfortunately, you're preaching to the choir, but yeah, that's really what people are going to need to do. And you know, the opposition that we've seen, it's really stemmed from that kind of organizing. It's been inadequate, obviously. You know, I feel, and I think most people feel that way. And you know, there is a lot of fear about what lays on the horizon. Yep. and you know, longer term impacts of what we're seeing in, you know, the past 8-9 months.
Are there any states that you see that are doing things right? Because look, I want to give people hope that there's some fight out there, that Democrats are, you know, finding their spine, you know, ready to ball up their digits, whatever. Are you seeing anybody doing things you go, this is moving in the right direction?
I believe California and New York bills have been pushed to kind of preempt and cover workers if the NLRA is basically thrown out, which is you know, what the Supreme Court could possibly do when it rules on the you know, Gwen Mills case with the NLRB chair who Trump fired, and you know, she sued, and you know, that's the Supreme Court's going to hear that case. You know, states have filed a lot of lawsuits. You know, California, you know, New York. You know, there are races. You know, Mamdani, I think his campaign is just a beacon of hope for people that kind of want to see those kinds of candidates and the issues they, you know, represent. You know, win in Democratic primaries and get elected.
Do you think that matters, though? Look, I've kind of come to this reality that we love our reality TV politics. We don't actually want government to fix anything. We just want to complain about it. At least that's the way it seems to me, because, you know, when people come up with ideas, hey, we should have public transit. Hey, maybe we should do something about rents being too high. Maybe we should do something about food deserts. You know, maybe we should do something about health care or stagnant wages, or, you know, the pothole in front of my house. There's always 100 reasons why, oh, that's socialism, or we can't do this, or there's a machine out there to stop it. And we just kind of go, eh, okay, I care about, throw out whatever Trump just threw out, the spaghetti that hit the wall. It seems to me we don't really care.
That sort of apathy, I think, is part of what's gotten us to this place. So I think it's going to take a lot of work, a lot of organizing to kind of, you know, push back, you know, whether it's in the courts, which those, you know, issues are likely going to unravel over the next few years, those slow processes. You know, I don't have a straight answer for you. I wish I did.
It was kind of more rhetorical than anything, because look, if we had, we've been trained almost my entire lifetime by Republicans to tell us that government can't and shouldn't and won't do anything, so don't expect anything. Whereas my grandparents' generation, they used the tool of government because government was them to get better wages, hours, conditions, better opportunities for their kids, and stronger health care and education, and, you know, being able to go on to college and all of the things that we look back to, you know, the 50s, 60s, going, hey, life was pretty good for working people during that period. It was because of government policy. It was because of an activist government that brought this to us. On the state, local, federal level, we believed in it. Now we've been trained like Pavlovian dogs that anytime we hear government's going to do something, to start foaming, even if it is good for us. And that's my frustration. Because I look at your state of Florida, where you currently are. You've got a surgeon general that I'm like, how does this guy get there? And why is his wife a story? And you've written about this, and I'm sitting here going, are we really talking about people who are, you know, into the supernatural? And I guess it's okay, because we've got a president that said acetaminophen causes autism. So I guess nothing is off the table.
It is, you know, very scary. You're seeing just fringes, whether it's in, you know, the medical field, you know, the Florida Surgeon General, you know, he's doing conferences with doctors who have had their medical licenses revoked. And he's doing conferences with his wife who claims that angels have, you know, visited her, and she's had visions, and she has these, you know, supernatural gifts. You have Casey DeSantis, who just claimed that ivermectin, which is a parasitic drug for animals, should be studied for cancer. And this is someone who successfully had chemotherapy and had her cancer treated with, you know, actual medicine, is just touting these just quack conspiracy unscientific it's just disgusting, just insane. These people are weirdos, and I think that's really what this, through the whole propaganda machine, people need to start kind of, you know, whether it's journalists or just people, just the regular people, need to do some research into, you know, the people that they're seeing, they're hearing from, and just digging into these people, their ideas, and you know, you scratch the surface, and it's just crazy.
You hit my buzzword. You hit the buzzword that I'm so tired of. Do your research, because now that you're here and you've opened this can of worms up for me, explain what research is, because I know what it's not. It's not sitting on the can watching YouTube videos. That is not research. No. So for every person who says, go out and do your research, I think there should be an education process of what freaking research actually is.
Well, I was taught in schools, but, you know, cite your sources is a big one. You know, whether, no matter the social media platform, you know, and across political spectrums, you're seeing, you know, memes, videos, people mischaracterizing things, whether they're doing it on purpose, that they're just doing it out of ignorance. Cite your sources. You know, what are reliable sources? I think everyone kind of should have learned in you know, middle school how to do a bibliography. You should be able to do that.
should have. Sadly, too many have not. And this is where do your own research turns into, hey, go watch this idiot who didn't do his research telling you what research he didn't do, because we're passing research opinion off as research. Or, you know, look, because someone who had autism took Tylenol. Yeah, there's that goes together. They took out Tylenol causes autism.
Yeah, the correlation and causation mix up.
Yeah, it's crazy. But here's the thing, you know, Florida voted for people who put these people into power, and this is what we get: garbage in, garbage out. Are we surprised? My view, no. Last line of questioning. Last question then: what can we do? What should people be doing? You brought up the research. Thoughts?
Yeah, I'm just pinning my stuff. Read the Guardian, support you know, independent media such as yourself. You know, there's, you know, plenty out there. And, you know, if you're seeing whether it's media or organizations doing work that you know, you see as, you know, beacons of hope, just get involved. You know, support those efforts. Yep. You know, don't sit on the sidelines. Don't get off of YouTube and TikTok, and spend less time on social media, and get, you know, engage more
while you still can. Get a library card. They're still free while you still can, before they ban and burn all the books and defund everything, while you still can, where you can actually do real research. There you go. Michael Sonato, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff. Hope folks will check out the work over at The Guardian, one of my favorite labor reporters. Thanks so much, Michael.
Thanks, Rick.
Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Do you got the research thing down? Have you figured this one out? I want to hear it. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 2007. It was that morning that a bridge under construction in Vietnam collapsed. The disaster happened in Kinh Tao, about 100 miles south of Ho Chi Minh City. It was a suspension bridge project to cross the Hao River. The project was run by Japanese firms working with the Vietnamese government. 250 workers were on site at the project when the disaster happened. 55 people were killed and another 100 were injured due to the collapse. One reason cited for the collapse was that torrential downpours had caused the support structure for the bridge to sink. Another possible reason was that the scaffolding on the construction project was too weak to hold the weight. When it failed, it took down a section of the four-lane concrete deck approach ramp with it. The fallen section weighed between 1,500 and 2,000 tons. The collapse was considered the worst disaster in the history of the Vietnamese construction industry. Man Hung, leader of one of the construction teams, described what occurred, saying, quote, "We suddenly heard a great explosion at a bridgehead. Dust covered a great airspace while workers screamed out. The scene was so terrible. The whole great block fell on people below." Vietnamese, along with Japanese and Filipino rescue volunteers, rushed to attempt to find survivors. 1,000 local residents gave blood at the hospital for those injured. The rescue efforts were hampered by the danger of a further collapse. They had to use a crane to clear the rubble. Finally, after 4 torturous days, the rescue efforts were called off. The bridge project was completed in 2010. The names of the fallen workers are inscribed on a memorial. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Our quote of the day comes from Live Nation CEO Michael Rapino. He's the guy who runs Ticketmaster. Anybody who's bought a concert ticket knows Ticketmaster got to get their slice or half in some cases. He's not running around saying there's a lot of runway left. He said that when you read about ticket prices going up, the average concert price is still $72. Try going to a Laker game for that. And there's so 80 of them. He goes, the concert is underpriced and has been for a long time. So this is one of those moments where you go, wait a second, I went to a concert and it was not cheap. And what this is saying is, expect prices to go up so that profits can go up. Because what they've learned, and this is what they've learned from the pandemic, not just Ticketmaster or any of these, but everyone. The reason grocery prices aren't going to come down until there's a major catastrophe, the reason your rent hasn't gone down, the reason that nothing has gone down. Here's the dirty little secret. They know you're going to pay it. Everyone complained about eggs. And I still remember the first time I did it. There were like 6 people standing around waiting to get to the eggs. And they were crazy expensive, and they're all complaining, can you believe this, can you believe, and I leaned in and I go, you know what you can do? And they're like, what? I go, you can not buy them. You want the price to come down, stop buying them. If they sit there long enough, they're going to want to get rid of them, and they're probably going to lower the price. And look, they've learned that, you know, we will most certainly pay whatever it is that they want. Which is why this dynamic pricing thing is great for them, for you and me. I actually had someone tell me that, and I don't know this to be absolute. This is one of those things that someone told me, but they bought something at a big box retail store. I won't say that. Which one? You know which one it is, though. And by the time they went from the back of the store to the checkout, the price had changed because I don't know why. And they didn't either. But they had actually, oddly enough, taken a picture of the item and the price. And when they got to the front, the price was $1 more. And what the cashier had explained is, well, they have the ability to change the prices when demand goes up. So the fact that this person picked it up increased demand. They want it. They brought it all the way to the front of the store. They'll pay an extra buck for it. And you know what? They did. Because corporate America's figured out. We haven't figured it out yet. They figured out that we'll pay whatever. We'll complain. We're good at complaining. But we're going to just suck it up. And same thing with concerts. There have been moments where I have, because it was something for the kids, I have done it. The majority of the time when I look at them, I go, nope, not doing it. I'll watch it on TV. Or I'll read about it tomorrow. And until we as consumers start doing that, holding these corporations accountable, it's not going to change. And as long as we continue to go, we want our politics like a bad reality TV show. things aren't going to change. This is our doing. Democracy is about we, the people, demanding from our tools, the people that we put into office, and they also have to fear when they don't deliver. That's on us. I know billionaire money, I know, but we're the ones so easily divided. We're the ones sliced and diced and pitted against each other. Want to hear your thoughts? Have you bought tickets that you go, I shouldn't? You ready? Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. A town hall is being held in Des Moines, Iowa, as Ian Roberts, the superintendent of the state's largest school district, was arrested and detained by ICE agents. CBS's Lana Zack with more on what took place earlier today.
In a targeted action today, law enforcement attempted to stop Roberts, who fled in a school vehicle. According to agents, Roberts possessed a loaded weapon, a criminal offense for someone without legal status in the U.S. Roberts has a long history of employment in New York, Baltimore, and D.C. schools, becoming superintendent of Des Moines in 2023.
Justice Department agents are being sent to ICE facilities. Attorney General Pam Bondi, in a post on social media, says that she is making the move to safeguard federal agents, protect federal property, and immediately arrest all individuals engaged in any federal crime. Bondi also says that she is instructing the Joint Terrorism Task Forces across the country to disrupt and investigate